Hello, everyone. Welcome. I am composer Evan Evans, and we're joined today with Dallas Crane, composer.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
And Steven Stratfert.
Hey, guys.
And Kyle Juhas.
Hello, world.
And today, let's talk about scoring.
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right.
So yeah, I was thinking today, I think we could open up with a pretty cool topic I've been thinking a lot about this past week, and just thinking about some, you know, plugins that are kind of cool that caught our eye this week, or maybe even in the past couple months, and something that maybe you want to share. Anybody think of anything that they've been using or testing out, seeing anything that's kind of, you know,
No, I mean, it's not new in any regard. I don't think, and maybe a couple years old at this point, but yeah. I think one of my favorite reverb units, I think it's actually very essential to scoring as well, would be it's Altiverb. You guys ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah.
It's I mean, the parameters on that are incredible. They actually went to famous cathedrals, famous concert halls, and they actually recorded the impulses there, the actual algorithms for the reverb unit themselves. So when you go through, you're not just picking, you know, church hall, or you're not picking plate. You're actually they actually recorded these impulses themselves. So the way you're getting your actual, I guess you would say, algorithms for it. So you get these beautiful, lush, very realistic reverbs out of this plugin. It's fairly, the last time I checked, it's fairly on the pricey side. I think the last time I saw it was like $500.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It really is kind of that be-all, end-all reverb unit. So you can get something very short and very much more blendable, or you get something that's very exaggerated from it. But I mean, I think just the clarity from it, it's pretty unparalleled so far. So that's something I would always really kind of jump for if I, you know, kind of like if I had like a dream, or like maybe even like a down the road, like an essential plugin list that I'd probably rely on. That would absolutely be it. For maybe delay units, I'd probably go with the H delay from Waves. I think it's just a very, very useful, very that's what I'm looking for here. Kind of a jack of all trades plugin. You can really get a lot of clarity. A lot of delay units sometimes will kind of get kind of muddled up. They'll have their own sort of a little bit of reverb tail in there, kind of add to the effect. But H delay is very clean. You can add. I mean, it's very precise too. I think that's kind of what something you're looking for too when you want a delay. You want something extremely like a very, very just great precision like tool, and that's perfect for it. So those are probably two of my favorites that I usually rely on.
Yeah, I've got it's a kind of specialist one. I don't use it a lot, and I played with it just a little bit. I think it's called Crystallizer.
Ooh, yeah.
It's like a plug-in, and you kind of feed it different sounds, and it'll spit out, you know, like weird effects. It basically just kind of chops them out and gives you this nice organic, you know, kind of crystalline effect.
Nice.
It's like $30. I think I got it on sale, so it's not too bad.
Very nice.
It's one of those ones you bring out every, you know, new moon or whatever. But it's exciting. That's generally, you know, with stuff like that, you have a lot of fun, and then you kind of put it away and let it sit there for a while. But
I love it too, because even those ones you don't think, it's just like a little decoration, but they still give you some ideas that you wouldn't be like, oh, I didn't think I could do that with that, you know, or that kind of sound. Like that's all I can use that for later. Exactly. You kind of shelve it for a different application, different situation.
Now, along the lines of Altiverb, there's also Mir Pro, and that's from Vienna Symphonic Library, VSL, and that's a stage placement plug-in so that you can place your instruments or outputs, signal outputs, onto a stage, and it's the absolutely most realistic, best version of that there is. Altiverb is similar in that way, and also Altiverb offers speakerphone. You know, AudioEase also offers speakerphone, which allows you to simulate sort of like telephone conversations or different rooms. And all that.
Yeah,
but Mir, I think Mir Pro is really it's pricey, but it's worth it. It's about $600 for the plugin, and it's about $400 per hall.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
So we're talking pricey.
If I can, I mean, anybody out there, if I can interject, I mean, if you see a plugin that's very expensive, keep an eye, follow them on social media, keep track of them, because they will have holiday sales, they'll have Black Friday sales, and those prices drop very, very largely. It's incredible.
Yeah.
or if you're a student, one of the best advice, I think one of the best pieces of advice I got from my professors was buy all your plugins when you're a student, because you use those student discounts like they're going out of, you know, style. And it's true. And most all plugin manufacturers or most audio you know, stores, they will accept that. They do student discounts. So
yeah.
Keep that in mind. But yeah, just keep an eye for sales. They will drop dramatically. So
I know you just recently did the update on the thing, and what was that synth again? That you
Yeah, Serum. There was a bit of an update. Oh, yeah.
What happened there?
So it was did some minor things. I think it messed it up more than I thought. I'm still working with the guy. It's cool though. Like, what I like about the guy who designed it is that he's on the forum. He responds to every question. So if something's not working for you, he'll respond within an hour.
What's the name of the manufacturer?
Oh, it's X for Records, like X XFFER Records.com. And you could get a demo for Serum. It's great. Test it out. And they have some really cool sound packs that they have for that. And a lot of people design sounds for it. It's very popular. And it's good because you get done. I mean, there's thousands of things like patches you can get for it. And it's like the cutting edge synth coming out. Another thing I'm also looking forward to, it might even be out. I have to really check. It's called Massive 10. That's the huge sequel to a Massive, which was really popular from Native Instruments. This time around, I heard they're doing some pretty interesting things with wavetable synthesis that they're doing with Massive 10. So I'm excited to, you know what, and maybe when that comes out, I could even do a review for you guys because it's going to be huge. So
that'd be awesome.
So it's going to be massive.
Massive. I would have thought that the sequel to, the newer update, refreshed update to Massive would have been massiver. Another good plugin company that I saw some of their new plugins this year at the NAMM show is Sugar Bites. They've been around for a while. And they create like all that glitch hop type stuff.
Oh, okay.
But if you actually get into their plugins suite, if you get into their plugin whole suite, there's a lot of great tools in there that you're not going to find anywhere else. I think that that can give you a kind of a unique sound. It's a very cool plugin.
Very cool. Very cool.
So you're talking glitch like distortion and bit crush, that kind of stuff?
Yes. The bit crush. Maybe not so much the distortion, but more like DJ type things. So like slows down and drops and
stuff like that.
And
cool.
And rhythmic repetition. So geek, 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 you know, get it into a loop or geek, 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 you know, and you can pick the different, there's a lot of sliders and controls to get that, to do that. But there's everything. I just did two, and they have maybe 30 or 40 different dimensions of things that you can do to sound that's occurring in the track, and you can automate it all as well.
Right.
So it's super awesome.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Sugar Bites.
Yeah. Now we have a question from Rui Lima. What's that?
No, never mind.
We have a question from Rui Lima in Portugal. He says he recently made a recording of his symphonic work, and on my advice, he wanted to try and conduct it because, as I say many times, your music can come out a lot better, even if you aren't as experienced as the conductor conducting, if you conduct it. And so he tried to do that, but the conductor initially said sure, but then sort of went back on that offer, and I think I know why. But so he had the question, you know, what do you think about conducting your own music?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you know, I would say that probably that situation, what happened there, Roy, was probably that was not, say, a session orchestra. That was more of an orchestra, you know, possibly a local orchestra. And that conductor had formed kind of a certain relationship with all those musicians. And probably in the end, he didn't want to really disrupt the camaraderie of the orchestra, which is a real big deal, the camaraderie aspect. And so that's probably why he said he'd rather not have you conduct it than he wanted to conduct it. However, with session orchestras or musicians that you could contract to put together for a session, it's a really great way to go. I find that even if I'm not as skilled as a professional 24/7 conductor, that it's worth just spending a week getting your chops up for a session and then conducting your sessions, because as a film composer, it's less about the music and it's more about kind of the why you wrote that music. And you can't really get a conductor to decipher that perfectly on the spot, bar by bar, phrase by phrase, section by section of the orchestra, but you know why you put those notes there. And that comes out when you conduct, and that actually makes the performance more effective for film music than if there was just a very good, tight, solid musical performance by a professional conductor conducting it, who's sight reading, conducting, or prepared to be conducting it. Because it's all about the drama in film music. So I highly recommend, if you can just learn some basic conducting, or go all the way with it so it'll match whatever level that you, the music you're writing is on the page, conduct your own music. It's going to go a long way for you.
Yeah, I like what you said about like saying you're the one who knows why you wrote that thing. I think that's important. And then also on the flip side, make sure you actually do know what you wrote and why you wrote it, because, you know, you can create a volume of work and after a while you kind of lose focus or you just kind of forget. So, you know, you got to keep that fresh so that you actually do have something to give if you're in that position. Right. When I ran the studio orchestra at my college for a few years, we had a conductor who would be our session conductor, and it was great. I think this probably just applies for, you know, like student and early entry composers rather than like professional, you know, top ensembles or anything. But it was great to have that conductor because he and I knew, you know, like I would help produce the sessions, and he and I would, you know how to keep things on time, how to keep people happy and decipher things. And then, you know, if the composer steps in, you know, suddenly we're recording half as many minutes of music. You know, if they record the take and then they sit there and say, hey, can I listen to the take over and see how it went, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
So in the interest of time, you know, sessions are very expensive and you want it to be as efficient and effective as possible. And conductors are, you know, who run those orchestras are very good at what they do. You know, I did a session at Fame's Orchestra, and from, you know, the start of the session to the very end, I was blown away by how fast they communicated, you know, the shorthand, you know, messages they gave to the orchestra, the order, you know, they just deciphered everything right away. So, you know, they're very good at that.
However, I must say that to stack on top of what I said is that's just going to continue to build a skill for you. So, you know, if you're not going to do everything and you have a professional conductor there, do try to get on that stage maybe one cue per 3-hour session.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, at least conduct something. Do something, build that confidence up, build that skill up to the point where maybe you can run your entire session. And from there, it just gets better and better. The kinds of changes and things that you need to do on the stand, you have to communicate from the control room to the conductor. And then the conductor has to basically do what you said without even understanding why you're making that change and make it happen musically. But if you're on the stand and you're right there, you can kind of save that little extra communication loop and be in control with your hands with what you're trying to shape out. You might even be able to do that on the spot, realizing it, that you forgot to communicate it between that last take, you already started again, and you're like, oh, I wanted to do that, okay. So now you're upcoming, I'm going to start much lower, you know, and then we'll bring that up, you know. Right. So there is a lot of advantage to conducting your own music. Now, yes, it's getting a great mix during the recording session, but if you've scheduled the workflow in such a way that that recording is going to also go into sort of a soundtrack mix, score mix phase for a few days or a week after the recording sessions, then it is even less important to be in the control room making sure that everything's just about darn near perfect when you can be right out there. And now, actually, they use those pulse watches. You know, have you seen those things where...
Oh, yeah, the rhythm.
Yeah, so now they don't have to have the headphones on, or they can have it just in one ear now, and they can be listening better, and so can you as a conductor too. So you all can be listening to each other better, and you can sort of work with the air there and work with the musicians as a whole.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
and I know Brian Tyler, I've seen a lot of his videos where he's doing a lot of the conducting.
That's right. Even just for like publicity or a good photo, you know.
Oh yeah,
that's another
good
reason.
I mean, geez, yeah. There's probably a lot of positives. Yeah. A lot of positives, a lot of positives.
Yeah, iron your shirt, you know.
Yeah.
It's I think for that kind of session stuff, I think you said something that kind of hinted at this, that you definitely should come prepared. This isn't something at the very end, you know, like, oh, I should probably conduct my own cue now. You know, right. You should be thinking about it. You should be ready and, yeah, you know, as prepared with that as you are with every other aspect of the process.
Yeah. But, you know, that said, you can make it as easy or as complicated as you want. I make everything as complicated as I like.
Yeah,
I just,
yeah,
that's definitely. Just the way my mind works. But, you know, you can just, if all you want to do is just conduct the beats or just even just like this, that's fine. That's going to do something. Just what I try to tell people and what I try to teach people is that just your presence, being there in front of the orchestra actually shapes the music. The way your eyebrows move, your elbows, your body leaning forward, all this stuff. You don't realize it, but there's a huge amount of unconscious communication that actually communicates to the musicians. And in fact, they'll kind of like raise their sensitivity level to whatever your max is, you know. So if you're kind of like, you know, in a little box, they're going to try and read something. You know, oh, I notice he always does that with his shoulder, you know.
Shoulder, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's a really great idea. Now, Dallas, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
Being an engraver and a copyist.
Yeah.
These days, now, at the latest versions of the different apps, what are some of the differences between, in notation world, Sibelius and Finale? Positives, pros, cons, that kind of thing. And also, maybe you can get into Note Performer, I think, which...
I know Dorico.
And you do know Dorico as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe if you could talk a little bit about the differences between Sibelius, Finale, and Dorico. Maybe not the specific differences, but what you found to be some of the great features of all those apps.
Yeah, so... Just in general, Finale has the... When you look at music engraving, there's a certain look at everything, and sometimes it's not so obvious. The most obvious difference is if you look at jazz charts, they're kind of in a scribbly font, and classical charts are in a very neat and orderly font. That's, you know, imagine that, but in a very, very nuanced way, and you start to see the differences between Sibelius, Finale, and Dorico. Sibelius generally is more user-friendly. People who are used to kind of point and click, you know, getting really into it and just the intuitive approach. Maybe if you're used to graphic design software, like anything of the Adobe suites, InDesign, After Effects, Illustrator, it kind of feels like that. You know, you point on something, you click on something, and then you modify that something. Finale is a little less direct. You have some different input modes that you can get used to, specifically the order with which you input the rhythms, and the actual pitch value is inverted between Sibelius and Finale. And I think Dorico's one or the other, I don't remember at the moment. So you have to get used to it. One, you play the rhythm, or you indicate the rhythm, and you can play the notes, and the other one, you hold the note, and then you indicate the rhythms.
It is one of those things where,
yeah,
like, dang, I have to keep remembering.
Like, all kind of fun, like, you know, do I pat my head, rub my belly,
exactly.
Or... Yeah. The other thing is some of the note shortcuts are different, I think, through all the programs. It's really annoying. Sibelius is 4 for a quarter note, Finale's 5, and Dorico's 6.
Oh, gosh.
You know, so in 50 years, we're going to have a 99-note keyboard, and you're trying to find the quarter note all over on the right side. So, yeah, there's some
weird
crossover.
What are some of the workflow things you could do like that? I know there's hardware add-ons you can, you know, to speed up workflow on the
notation. Yeah, so Dorico's really great for workflow if you're importing MIDI, because it will automatically format any held note to proper notation. Generally, you know, when you have a measure, you divide it in half so that you can see the rhythm. You know, you'll have like 2 half notes, or you'll have 4 quarter notes. You know, if there's a syncopation that crosses that halfway line, usually you mark it in such a way that you can still see that. So Dorico does all of that automatically, which is really nice.
Oh.
But when you import it in Sibelius or Finale, then you get some really weird, ugly notation, and that's just extra time.
Partially that's because when you set up your meter, you also set up the division.
Yeah, you can do that. Yep. So I guess technically Sibelius also gives you the option to set up the divisions, but it doesn't respect it when it imports MIDI. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's some obvious gaps. Sibelius is just really old software, and they've just updated and added stuff onto it, but it's fundamentally old.
Yeah.
You know, Dorico is very new and fresh. Dorico actually feels a lot like InDesign, especially getting like text flows versus music notation flows. So if you're familiar with anything like
right,
that.
Like text is data and format is not text. Format is how you flow data.
Yeah, it's got master pages. It's got wild cards. It has, you know, like in InDesign, you would be doing, like if you're doing a novel, you'd have the text, you know, scroll to the bottom and then on the next page it would start up again, and Dorico's the same way with the music. So there's a lot of flexibility with the shape of your document and how you present your music that isn't present in the others. So I'd say Dorico is the most advanced, Sibelius is the most user-friendly, and Finale
and also,
is the most
for
professional.
For people who do use MIDI, you know, primarily MIDI keyboards and MIDI input and all that, I understand Dorico and Sibelius, I don't know about Finale, will, you know, transcribe your MIDI performance into notation. And then even from there, Dorico has now MIDI lanes, so you can see, like, the velocities and edit the piano roll MIDI note information if you're not a notation dude.
Yeah, MIDI, Dorico has the what's called play tab. So you have the setup tab and the write tab and the engrave tab and then the play tab.
Yes.
The play tab is what you're talking about, the MIDI side of it, where you can kind of carve out and sculpt the performance.
You can, you know, change your controller curves and change the performance side of things, which is fantastic. It's really been looked for
really
in a notation
awesome.
Program. Sibelius never really gave you that. There were tons of workarounds, but, you know, you'd have to write all this CC data onto the page.
Yep.
And then the other thing that was the big update at the show, the NAMM show this year for Dorico, was now you can have a video, which syncs to SMPTE, which anchors to a bar, and you can have a score, which has multiple cues anchored to different points in that same video. So you can have an entire score up at one time.
Yeah.
And you can also have different, now I don't know the words, maybe they're called flows.
Yep.
But you could have one for like a sketch versus an orchestra. So there's different ways to see your ideas as well.
Flows are like chunks in DP, so that's basically the cue, right? So it's a new piece of music that's independent of the other, and it can start whenever you want. Which is fantastic, you know. That's why you use DP, so you can have everything all at once, and then
can you start a cue in the middle of another cue, sort of an Ives kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. Actually,
yeah.
You can have independent time signatures and tempos. Yeah, it's super flexible that way.
That's awesome.
There's still some really weird stuff missing, like you can't do like aleatoric boxes and, you know, some of those peripheral engraving techniques.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done some Dorico projects where I did need to actually go into Illustrator and then add some graphic elements on top and export it. So that was a little annoying, but it wasn't so bad. And I think the fact that I was able to import the MIDI and have it completely clean.
Just the early days of
of
Dorico.
Yeah, but I saved so much time at the beginning anyway, just not even have to clean the MIDI or, you know, clean it.
Right.
It just kind of came in clean and engraved itself properly.
As far as I know, the guys that created Sibelius created Dorico.
Yeah, the old guard of Sibelius.
Mm-hmm.
I think before Avid took it over.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And Dorico, so therefore Dorico is kind of like Sibelius 2.0 or however you want to think of it.
Yeah.
It's next gen.
It's very smart. Yeah. It thinks of players as people, which then have different instruments at their disposal. And so you can assign instruments to the people, and then it will automatically populate their parts with the different instruments that they may play. So if you have doublers, you know, like jazz setting, that's super helpful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just everything about the workflow is what you would be asking yourself if you had pen and paper in front of you and you were engraving it.
I think Brian Tyler needed that on his recent performance where he was jumping from drums to keys to conductor. He should
one
be taking that part
paper
with him, you know? Yeah.
Totally.
How would you rank those, like from one to three?
So, I would say Dorico right now is, I want to say one. I really do enjoy it a lot, and it's, you know, besides those really small aleatoric things, it's been very effective and very useful. And I don't have to worry about weird problems that will mess up, you know, in a huge way later on. And there aren't any catastrophic problems with it.
Yeah, but maybe if you have a needs, maybe that feature is not there yet.
Yeah.
So then you have to do a workaround.
Yeah.
But it's robust. in what they've given you.
Yeah, it's very transparent. You know, you're not going to have these weird errors show up, which can happen with some of the other programs. And then I would say usability over the improvement of the look you get from Finale. So I would say Sibelius is second, Finale third, because Sibelius is just really easy to use and you mm-hmm. can do a lot with it. And then, I mean, it just looks, if you really know what you're doing, you can get it to look 99% like Finale anyway. You know, guys like Tristan Noon have good books about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and Tim Davies as well.
Yeah. I was a copyist in Sibelius for many years, and yeah, absolutely. We're able to do everything that Finale, we always would say, could do, but better, you know. But then Finale people would be like, that treble clef is just no good. But, you know, I disagree, but, you know, that's just different looks for different folks, you know.
Yeah,
and it really doesn't matter because the session musicians, at least here in L.A., they need to be able to read a dot matrix printout, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like a quick scribe from DP or something.
Yeah, those are no excuses sessions, you know. So, you know, you can put written word in front of them and they got to make music out of it if necessary. Yeah. I also wanted to touch on StaffPad. Has anybody ever used StaffPad?
No. I've played around with it, but not like very well.
Okay.
With those kind of programs, I think the biggest flaw is that, you know, they're not very complex, so they don't know how to handle like quintuplets, for example, or very minor stuff like that that is really complicated technically. But if you're trying to write it out and, you know, you're writing, then you say, oh shoot, I need a seven tuplet.
Yeah.
The whole thing breaks and you're done for.
Yeah. I'd like to recommend, I use StaffPad. I own StaffPad. I think there's the advanced version. I own that. And I basically hit a ceiling with it pretty fast.
Yeah.
I think it was like 1 or 2 days. And I was like, all right, well, you don't have that. You don't have that. You can't do that. You can't do that. Mm. So I started to look for an alternative. And I found an app called Notate Me Pro. And it's pretty darn good. It works on every type of computer, all the way down to your Android phone and up, and nice. They're all they can read each other's libraries, so you can bring your files and bring them up on anything, you know, iPads, what do they call, like Samsung, like a Galaxy tablet, in Android, Macs, PCs, also the Surface, you know. And it's really cool because it keeps your notation. You can keep flipping back and forth. You can see how is it coming out.
And how did I write it?
And then how did I write it? And you can go, ooh, it's not coming out so good. Well, in StaffPad, it's a little bit too late. Once you finish a bar, you sort of commit to it. But with Notate Me, you can even go back. You could print out your handwriting. So you can kind of like stay in handwriting mode if you wanted to. But you could go back. You can make a little adjustment. Oh, I see. It's misreading, you know, my 16th note bar, my connection at the top, you know, and then you could connect it a little better. And then you flip back and you're like, oh, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is very good.
There's playback too as well.
And that's the cool thing is that it plays back as well.
Oh,
and
wow.
It plays back pretty darn good. It even does some gestures like glisses and fall-offs and crescendos, of course, and trills. And which on a timpani would be a roll if you added it with a crescendo, you know, and cymbal rolls. And so it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
I know. I think it's like with Chinese keyboards on phones. You can obviously type what you want, but you can also draw in the symbol that you want if it's faster. And I wonder, you know, in the future, if that's what it's going to be like, you know, you've got your drawing pad and most of the stuff you can input, but then you want some weird aleatory and you just said, okay, well, I'm going to draw this. And then it's smart enough to know what you want. You know, it's so complex that the hard stuff is what it's the best at.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be a fantastic workflow just to, you know, that connection between the paper experience and the...
Well, I remember on Sibelius, the Finn twins who wrote that software and are now working on Dorico. I remember they eventually started to partner up with, I forget which company it was, but they do handwritten music notation recognition. They're one of the top ones.
Mm-hmm.
They're still the tops right now. I think actually that company
like
is the one that makes
Notate
Me Pro. That one I just mentioned. So what I'm saying is I think it's in their philosophy, the Finn twins, which over at Steinberg with Dorico now, you might see in the future them add on a handwritten ability.
Fantastic.
Wow. Oh man, to
cool.
Dorico. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Because you could do it anywhere, right? You could be sitting on the bus.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's what I love about that Notate Me Pro thing. I can even have it on my phone. Like, sometimes I'm sure we all do this. Like, you're, like, getting tired, and you're sleeping on your pillow, and your head's on the pillow, and you got your phone, and then you put it into non-rotate mode, and you can turn it sideways, and you can have your head sideways and the phone sideways, but to you, it's straight, right?
yeah.
So I've literally, it's been, you know, like, 2 a.m, and I need to have a theme written for my team,
cool.
And I'll have that theme written, like, my wife's, you know, asleep, and I have the headphones in my ears, and...
Oh, wow.
And I'm writing a full orchestral, you know, 32-bar theme, you know, while I'm laying my head down on a pillow because it's the end of the day, you know, and I need to spend time with my family. But they went to sleep, and now there I am. So I still got work to do when I finish it up. And I mean, yeah, Notate Me Pro has been, like, really, really wonderful. I've really enjoyed that app. And
can you also use, like, one of those, like, little pens or something, whatever those are called?
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah. What do they call it?
A stylus.
That's it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In fact, I eventually, since I got Notate Me Pro, I got a little stylus for my phone, and I keep it next to my drawer. And
Lily Pond is another notation software that some say is visually perfect, but the input method is so terrible. It's actually not even drag and drop or click and place or anything. You actually have to type in different bits of code to get it in the right place.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, I mean, if you do want to compose on the bus and you want to put a little bit of effort, you could, you know, just kind of close your eyes and type in, you know, 0 + 4.
I know guys who would like that in the notation
eight.
Field. They would just love those nerds would just love that.
Yeah, so any Lilypod fans, let me know how that goes.
And now, not handwriting recognition related, but notation related, there is an online app called Flatio. They offer a free plan, kind of a basic plan, and a pro plan. And it allows you to do notation online. So it's sort of like Dorico, but cloud Dorico, you know. It's called flat.io. You can go there, and they even offer collaborative composing, so you can share your score with others, and you can either give them permission to or not permission to write, you know, parts of the score with you. You can also have them mark it up, or you could be someone who's a teacher maybe, and you can sort of like write notes on somebody else's composition, and then they can make a change, make an update, has revisioning, and then you can see that revision in the changes with color. It shows you the changes in color. So you can track the progress of a student's composition, or this could be used in collaborative scoring. So that service is called Flatio, flat.io, and it's like, even the pro version, I think, is like $6 a month.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I mean, you guys could probably show them some love. Go over to the website, sign up. It's free. And, and it's nice to have some kind of an app that you can reach over the web on any computer anywhere, you know, and have your songs and your music up there anywhere. And it plays back. It plays back as well. So you can hear it with pretty darn good samples.
Wow. That's so cool, because most of the time it's either like collaborating via like a garage band type thing, like where people are coming together and putting the music together. But here it's like an actual notation,
right.
Which is kind of cool. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
And so
seems like there's a resurgence on notation. And I think Dorico is helping bridge that gap. And another app that I should mention is Overture from Sonic Scores. Sonic Scores. Overture, and that's similar to Dorico Sibelius in the in the way that it's a notation program, but also a little bit more similar to Dorico in the fact that it can expose the MIDI side of things. It's actually a DAW. It's a DAW and a notation software. But it puts your piano roll notation onto a staff, and you can actually see it as piano roll notation. So for people who don't even read music, I've had them report back to me that they've actually started to be able to read music, because now they can see kind of like the technique of reading music on the page as piano roll on the staff. And they're reading like full score, but ironically in piano roll mode, which is fantastic, you know, and then they can draw the crescendos and everything.
Mm.
And it's really kind of raising their game, you know, musically. And I think Dorico could eventually go that route, and a lot of programs are going that route. Maybe Flatio will start to go that route, and we'll see this resurgence of people learning traditional classical notation as well as extended techniques in 20th century and 21st century techniques.
And you also have a special kind of technique that you use. I don't know if we want to... there, where you have, like, you can actually write it down on on the computer,
One of the things that Stephen is talking about that I do is, are you talking about, like, sketching kind of, like, gestures and stuff?
Well, don't you have... You have a screen and you can, like...
Oh, yeah, right actually, behind me here.
Yeah, right behind you, yeah.
There's a screen with a notation. I use a pen. Here, I'll put this closer over here.
Really cool. Yeah.
Which allows me to... I can erase, and I have different angles, give you different, you know, quill angle, and with the forward and back button, I can access different menus.
Oh,
and pressure as well can access different things, how much ink that's being used. And I write in handwritten notation, but digitally into the computer. But that's probably for... I'd have to set that all up as a presentation. I will do that at another broadcast.
Yeah, you were mentioning the kind of overlaying different parts, and I remember that was one of the cool things about Digital Performer that I liked was, it actually took me a while to like it, but I do like it, is when you're working with the MIDI CC channels, you can see everything at once, and you can edit it at once, or you can show only. Super useful to have just everything all in front of you.
Do you know that's something that I waited something around 15 years to get? Because that was in the old Opcode StudioVision Pro, and it was actually brilliant because it was very intuitive. Whatever thing you were close to, it shows you all the different CC data in one overlapping view, all those curves, in different colors. And then when you would point at one, you could start to edit it and draw on it. And StudioVision Pro would actually allow you to do that. Whereas I think in Performer, you have to have selected in the bottom left which one you kind of want to be editing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have two controls. You've got the pencil and then whatever the R stands for. I forget. And you hold down the pencil key and it'll draw what you want, either, you know, generally modulation or expression, and very rarely like volume or breath or something like that. And then the R will actually do the velocity values, so the attack, you know, the kind of shown as vertical bars, the red on the note attacks, you can hold the R and you can even out or draw it out.
So depending on the key you hold down, sort of like filters to what you're going to be editing.
Yeah,
very good. Yeah. Motu Digital Performer. Mark of the Unicorn Digital Performer. Motu DP, that's a great program, yeah. Now, Gonzalo Gonzalez in Miami asked, how do you add expression to your virtual instrument parts, like expression pedal or mod wheel, and do you draw it in after playing it? And how can you overcome the tendency to write pianistic lines for other instruments, right?
So let's hit the first part of that question. Depends on the line, because I'm not a great player. So if it's a simple line, like a string line or something, I can do the modulation wheel, which is generally, you know, volume and vibrato, that kind of thing. So I can play it in, and then with the right hand, some degree of control over how hard I press the keys. This is like LA scoring strings. You know, the harder you push, the sharper the attack is. So you can control. That's kind of like two different things, controlling as I perform. And then other things like expression tend to be just like shaping it to a more fine degree. So that's generally what I play in. Same with like winds. If you have any kind of volume control, you can ride that. But some of the other things, let's see, like drums, I play them one at a time, just one, unless I can get it under my fingers, you know, so there's some kind of a technical limitation there, but it doesn't affect really the artistic expression, because it's all in my head, and I've got a checklist in my head, and I just have to, you know, get through it anyway.
Right. Well, I think, you know, some of the things I could add on are that, there's also breath controller, so you could attach like this kind of tube to your head and you wear it, or your neck and you wear this like tube that goes in your mouth and you can blow into it and it plays like a wind or brass instrument would, you know, and you can tongue and you can do whatever you do with your tongue, and it gets translated into pressure, into breath pressure, and then that can control whatever you wish it to control is a parameter in the sample that you're playing back. One of the most typical would be like the dynamic velocity layer, like how loudness, right, of the instrument. But you can make it control a lot of things, you know. That could that could control actual breath sound that's coming in on an instrument, or shimmer on a brass instrument, or a lot of different things. So that's one way during input, well, you know, you could add some more dimension. And then, mod wheel, very good. Now, I use this keyboard over here. I'm not quite sure if you can see this, but it has a ribbon controller that's like 100 millimeters. Or I forget the exact distance, but I believe it's about 100 or 120 millimeters. And when I first got this Native Instruments Control S88 keyboard with that ribbon controller where it's only touch sensitive, I was worried because I was used to using a mod wheel. And when you touch a mod wheel, you can touch it exactly where it was. You can just put your finger right on it where it was. It's not any physically different. And then you can just gently, right now, see it literally, you probably can't even tell, but I'm actually moving, and I'm moving like, you know, about 10 velocity steps of difference with my index finger. So I was very concerned about when I got this keyboard if that was going to be a problem. But actually, they integrated an algorithm in there, which allows you to latch on to wherever you're at with your finger, and it doesn't make it like hiccup or skip or jump to where your finger is. Thank goodness, unless it's farther. So there's a certain algorithm to it, and you know where it's been left because it has a little light indicator that's up on the side, and it goes up on the side, so you know how to grab it right where it was. And I have to say, actually, my accuracy is more accurate with this because they probably give you, I don't know, thousands of steps of accuracy with that thing. Right. And it's probably an analog ribbon controller converted to digital and then down converted to MIDI. And algorithm-wise, I'm able to do much more micro-specific, accurate movements with the ribbon controller. So if anyone's afraid of jumping ship from a mod wheel to a mod ribbon, I encourage you to give it a try. It really is actually better. I, you know, someone who didn't think it would be, and it is.
So what I really love, have you guys heard of, I'm sure you have, like Aftertouch, you know? So I have a particular keyboard, although I want to, it's way too sensitive, but I want to get something a little bit, you got to be careful with that. So what that is like, when you press a key and then you can kind of change mod, it's like a mod wheel, but you're kind of applying pressure to a key, which can act as a mod wheel type thing. Really cool if you can get, not all keyboards have it. You need to specifically look for Aftertouch, and sometimes there's a polyphonic Aftertouch, and there's different kinds. So maybe you want to go for the polyphonic, and that's like you could do multiple keys at the same time,
right,
with different Aftertouch effects.
There's like a new keyboard series that's out now called the Roly. Have you seen these?
Oh yes, those are really cool.
And those not only give you the Aftertouch and polyphonic Aftertouch, so pressure sensitivity on the keys, and ribbon controlling, mod wheel, and pitch bend, but also depending on how far up and down the key spread you are, that's also another dimension. So a Roly can be a really cool way to control a lot of dimension of expression in one particular unit, and that, slap on a breath controller at the same time and maybe an expression pedal. And you know, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 inputs right there. That would personally drive me nuts, but some people do master that. Chris Stone is a friend of mine, composer, and that's how he does everything with breath controller, pedal expression, mod wheel, polyphonic aftertouch, velocity, and pitch bend. And then he'll put all of his hands, fingers down, and he can control an entire string section. It was the creator of Divisi Strings, which was this software where he could control an entire pre-recorded string orchestra under massive different dimensions, which would change, for instance, like where they bowed on the next close to the bridge, but like, with slight variation, it could, you know, move down and bow it more towards the fretboard or non-fretboard, the fingerboard. And so those are some ways how you can get it in live time. Now, I think that's just like too overwhelming for me. That would drive me nuts. And I'm a bit more of like a session mentality, just get it out through brute force kind of thing. Speed, speed, speed. So what I usually do, and this also combats his final question, which was, how can you overcome the tendency to write pianistic lines for other instruments, which aren't piano, basically is what he was implying. And I think for instance, a lot of guys will play like strings. They'll play the cord, you know, they'll grab the cord and they'll put it on the violins or whatever, or the strings, or maybe they have a strings patch, and or maybe even auto divisies, and then they'll mod wheel up, you know, and they'll bring it in and out, but it still sounds pianistic to me, and it still sounds keyboardistic. And the reason is because you're playing it like a keyboard player. You're playing all the harmonies like a keyboard. The first thing that you should do to make sure your stuff doesn't sound keyboardistic is only play one note at a time.
One part at a time.
Yeah, and if that's like mentally messes with your brain to now break up a chord because you're a chord guy, good.
Yep.
Start to get used to breaking up your harmony mentally into multiple lines. It's going to get you give you better counterpoint results. You're going to be thinking about how your lines move. You're going to start to notice that that, you know, moving chords around is not how orchestral music moves notes around in an orchestra. The musicians need musicality in front of them, and that requires great counterpoint and nice voice leading and everything. And so once you start to break up your harmony into those different methods, you're going to notice that, you know, you might want to restructure how you think about that. And good, the results are going to be much better.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. So I was going to say too, to both parts of that question is, if you don't want to sound like a piano, you need to know what other instruments sound like. Most people know what the piano sounds like because they sit at the piano and they play it and they get used to, okay, left hand does open chords and right hand does melody or whatever. But you need to listen to other instruments. You need to know how they function, right? So if you're a string, you know, if you're writing for strings, you need to know the open strings and how they navigate it. You know, if the string player were to write a piece, where are the parts on the violin or the cello that are really comfortable for them, that they would favor more? Just like a, you know, piano player isn't going to do this weird, you know, chromatic cluster up the keyboard because it's just so weird on their fingers. You know, so you get used to how the player experiences the instrument, right, and then you can filter your composition through that. And then I think the other thing about drawing in notation, you know, making it not sound like a piano, this is all just based on your knowledge. The DAW is your tool, and it doesn't matter how you input it because it's not some invisible force. You know, if you input it the right way, it's going to sound magical. It's all your understanding of the instrument and knowing what the instrument needs from you in order to make it sound more realistic.
I just wanted to add just quickly, like, don't try to play it as like you're playing the piano. Don't, like, put like 10 octave leaps in a row, and don't try to play like you're playing a piano. I think a lot of people try to think, oh, well, I can do this 3-octave leap and then come down and do all this stuff and runs. So that's just a little thing that I learned.
Right, those are pianistic gestures. There are idiomatic gestures, idiomatic sounds, idiomatic musical, you know, things that come out of each instrument, like Dallas was saying, you know. And so you want to learn sort of the physicalities of those different instruments so you can know, like, kind of like what they can, how they, you know, express themselves. And then, you know, I mean, you really got to think about this. A piano just goes, like, let's say this is the keyboard, right? Well, I got a keyboard behind me, okay? But a piano just goes, boom. That's it. That's all a piano does. Everything else that you do with that piano is pianistic. It's idiomatic of what you can possibly do for the piano. The only characteristic piano has is strike and decay.
Yep, start a note.
It can't make a note louder as it progresses, as it holds. It can't bend. It can't. Trill, not really.
You can't do timbral effect.
You know, that's piano. You can do a pianistic trill, but it's not actual trill. You can't tremolo.
Solponicello. No.
Solponicello. I mean, that's it. A piano is an extremely limited instrument, and if you want to become a good orchestral composer, stop thinking in terms of the piano. Get away from the piano. It's handicapping you. Get off the piano, get your hands off the piano, and start thinking inside your mind. Use your imagination. Start coming up with some things and trying to put them down on the page or recreate them in your MIDI. But don't create them in your MIDI, and don't create them with your keyboard. Create them in your mind.
Yeah, I think that's great. The piano shouldn't be the one writing what your music is, you know, and if... You know, you want to feel like you're this musical genius where the art just kind of flows out of you all at once. But really, it's, you know, the most artistic and creative you can be is sitting there slaving away at one element at a time and making sure it's absolutely perfect.
Now, this summer we have an upcoming seminar which has some courses on how to up your game in that realism aspect of MIDI and getting all those controllers and doing all the controller, that particular class during the 6-day intensive seminar is called Synthestration. And the entire seminar is called Total Scoring Mastery. And we'll be having the website up for that in a couple days where you can buy tickets in advance. And you can attend virtually via live stream, or you can come to Universal Studios where we'll be having it, and you can attend in person. I look forward to potentially seeing many of you there. Well, that's it for our show today.
Awesome.
And I look forward to seeing you next week, everybody. Have a great week.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Nice. Didn't see that coming.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, 14. Nice.
14. Oh, nice.
That's good.
Yeah. I think that gets people excited. You know?
That was good to end of that, too. Everyone's like, what was that?
You know, wait, what was it? What?
Yeah, see, exactly. Yeah.
Did you hear it at the end?
Caught their
attention?
Yep. That was a good idea. Very good. Yeah,
I think the pacing was really good on that.
Yeah, I tried to keep it a little bit tight. I don't think, we didn't have any more subjects, right?
No, I was kind of like...
Let's make sure, every week, each one of you brings one topic.
Okay,
you brought plugins.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was so focused on the mixing thing.
And then I don't think Dallas brought one.
I brought something this morning.
I told him about the Dallas thing. Yeah, I know, it's hard. I got to bring one, too. And so I think we did good, though. We did 55 minutes.
Yeah.